have come now in this series of programs in the book of Revelation to Revelation 13. And the very first beast of Revelation 13, with its many constituent parts, the four most important parts of the four beasts of the seventh chapter of the book of Daniel, that all biblical commentaries show, is a series of representations of the four world-ruling empires, beginning with Babylon, ancient Persia, Greco-Macedonia, and finally the Roman Empire, which was to have many successive resurrections. Now, according to biblical prophecy and historically, though the massive amounts of loss of life seem to be prodigious to us in our modern view of history, really, in many ways, what the two great despots, Hitler and Mussolini, put together, and later the axis between Berlin, Rome, and then Tokyo, was only minuscule, according to history and biblical prophecy, in comparison with the massive loss of life under many of the ancient Roman Caesars and the successors all the way down through the Middle Ages and thereafter. If we look into the Bible to see the real meaning of biblical prophecy and what is going to happen now, then the pivotal prophecy of all the Bible is Matthew 24. And Jesus Christ of Nazareth is the greatest prophet who has ever lived, who lays out a step-by-step series of events to tell us what we can expect in the future. How can you understand these scriptures in the book of Revelation, except in a futuristic sense, the sense that these scriptures are yet to be fulfilled? Now think about it from the point of view of history and the perspective of the future in biblical prophecy as we look at the 13th chapter of Revelation in retrospect again. John saw a great vision standing upon the sand of the sea. He said, I saw a beast rise up out of the sea. That's a symbol of a great government rising up out of multitudes of people, having seven heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. That means taking the very titles of God, the divine titles of God, and applying them to a state or a nation, a national system. Verse 2, and the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard. I explained that before. Now it goes on to talk about one of the heads wounded to death, and I explained that at the collapse of the ancient Roman Empire in 476, how the deadly wound was healed, and it was, by General Belisarius in 554 A.D., sent by Justinian to, in a sense, restore many of the areas of the then defunct Roman kingdom. And it said all the world wondered after the beast, and verse 4, they worshipped the dragon. Now the dragon we know is Satan the devil, Revelation 12 and verse 9. But where do you know of a church or a collection of churches who are devil worshipers? I have heard of one obscure sect, I think, headquartered in San Francisco, where they have marriage ceremonies with people lying in coffins, and they openly claim to worship Satan the devil. But most churches claim to be worshiping God. Now, there are more than 400 varying, differing Protestant denominations, and enough dozens and hundreds of other sects to make up perhaps over 1,000 of them in all. And when you look at all religions, even at the ancient Gentile polytheistic religions of India, of China, of Japan, of Southeast Asia, the South Pacific Islands, with their idols, with their obelisks, with their weird, many-armed creatures, with their Buddhas and their various imagery that they use to represent their gods. And what do they worship over in Japan and China? What is one of the main features of some of their serpentine-like parades down the street but a dragon? And when you look into some of the so-called Christian religions, you see the same accoutrements that are seen in ancient Babylon, ancient Greece, ancient Rome, ancient Egypt, such as the goose, ducks, rabbits, eggs, flies, symbols of grubworms and never-ending life, and the cyclical character of a fly that lays an egg, which becomes a maggot, which becomes a fly, in corrupting, putrefying meat. And what in the world flies have got to do with great basilicas and churches? You know, when you go to some of the leading basilicas in all of Europe, as I have done many times, and you walk in and you're in the headquarters of what is called the greatest church on the face of the earth, and they're up on the ceiling and the friezes and around the great huge columns and the arches are eggs and flies. Everywhere you look, flies, chiseled out of solid stone, cast in concrete, in beautiful marble, flies everywhere. And you wonder, what in the world is a dirty, filthy critter like a common housefly doing, adorning the walls and the decorative friezes of church buildings? And then you begin to study. A very important book like Hyslop's Two Babylons, because the Bible talks about ancient Babylon, but it talks about a modern-day Babylon, and you read in Revelation the 17th chapter of a great mystery religion system that is called Babylon the Great. And then you look a little further and you find that the ancient god of the Sidonians, the ancient god of some of the Assyrians and Babylonians, was Baal, or Baal, as they called him, and he was called the god of flies. His symbol was the common housefly. You see, ancient pagans knew about flies laying eggs on putrefying meat, and they saw in this cycle of never-ending life immortality. They saw worms that never died, but merely hatched and, lo and behold, became another fly. And in their ancient mystery religions, flies and other symbols of perpetual or cyclical life adorned their various gods. Isn't it strange that even today, people worship what they think is the real God?